This is A Drink with a Friend. I'm Tish Oxenreiter.
And I'm Seth Haynes.
Seth, what are you drinking?
Well, I am drinking what I like to call proletariat coffee. You know what that is, right?
The people's coffee.
It's the people's coffee. It's not fancy. Yeah. It's just the coffee out of the Keurig machine, you know, and it's awful. But it's all I had today.
From your office?
Yeah. So I'm working at the office today, which means I am stuck with donut shop coffee. It's just truly terrible. So to all you out here listening to A Drink with a Friend with your own drinks, I hope everyone brings a drink to this because it feels like they should. To all of you who are drinking terrible coffee from the donut shop Keurig coffee, I'm with you, man. We're together. Today, we are together. So Tish, what are you drinking? I hope it's better.
I think it might be better. I haven't sipped it yet. It is kind of in honor of this topic that we're talking about today, but also not at all. It is white wine, which I am not a big, I mean, I like wine when it's in front of me, but I don't seek it out. So I thought it'd be fun to open some wine at 1 p.m. on a Wednesday. However, the reason it's not exactly right, it's kind of proletariat, is because it's from a can. And it's from California.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's American canned wine.
And I was even looking for the type of wine and it just says Blanc.
Blanc.
So it's just white.
Which is a French word. So it's French named American wine from a can.
Yeah, Modesto, California. So this is not fancy.
Yeah, we're really stretching to connect it to the topic.
We are. I have bottles of wine. I just didn't want to open one. I mean, I don't know.
It's too much work, really. Are you going to just,
too much work.
1 o'clock on a Wednesday, you're going to drink a whole bottle of wine?
I'm home by myself. Yeah, it's not a thing. So I'm drinking a can of wine that's been in my fridge for quite a while.
Okay, here's to your canned wine.
Exactly. And we'll see if it's any good. I haven't had it yet. It's passable. Yeah, it'll work.
It's passable?
I don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
You know what it tastes like? It tastes like airplane wine.
That's a ringing endorsement. It tastes like airplane wine that is passable, and I don't hate it. Okay.
They'll put me on their website, I'm sure.
I'm sure they will. Your face on the side of the can.
Blanc California wine. All right. Well, so let's talk about the thing we're going to talk about, which is related to wine, but nowhere near Blanc wine from California.
I mean, is it related to wine? It's kind of related to wine the way it's also related to painting.
Yeah, it's actually more related to painting.
Yeah, I would argue it's more related to painting too. I would argue it's potentially even more related to sculpture. Would you agree with that?
Why?
Because there's a lot of what we're going to talk about today involves a lot of statues.
It does, I guess. Yeah, and paintings. You know,
frescoes.
We should probably stop burying the lead. People are going to be turning it off right now.
I just love it so much.
So why don't you reveal what's behind the curtain and what we're talking about?
If you were to pull aside the curtain, behind it you would see Seth and Tish staring at a fresco of a saint on a wall somewhere in the heart of Italy.
Yep. Because next summer, 2022, we are leading a trip to Italy and we want you guys to go. So anyone listening, you're invited.
That's going to be invited so fun. Can you imagine going to Italy with us? I mean, I actually...
How lucky you are.
I mean, I actually can't imagine it because I have been to Italy with us.
Yep. With us.
And it was a good time.
With us, meaning... several us. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's a great segue because I was going to ask you before we get into our, order of events, let's take a walk down memory lane perhaps and talk about what Italy has meant to you since we last went there, which has been a while.
Yeah. So what year was that? I don't even remember. Was that
2014?
14. That's golly, how long that's it was. 7 years ago. That's pre-pandemic. That's like a whole nother lifetime ago.
Oh, by a long shot. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, So in 2014, you and Kyle and Amber and I went to Italy with a group of writers, and some amazing writers were on that trip. Our friend Nish was on that trip. Our friend Adrielle was on that trip. I mean, just beautiful, wonderful human beings. And we had a really, really good time. But I remember we stayed in this little village on the outskirts of really nowhere. I mean, it was it was the suburbs
just outside of nowhere.
Nowhere.
yeah.
But it was beautiful. I remember, you know, we could stand on the back sort of patio and look out over the hills of Tuscany. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me about Tuscany, and I continue to be wowed by my photographs from Tuscany, is that every scene, either in the morning or in the evening, you know, at golden hour, looks like a painting. It doesn't look real. Mm-hmm. And when you take photographs of it, they look absolutely digitized, like a painting. Like, they don't look like actual photographs. And you look at that and you're like, that's a photograph, but it looks like a painting. It's mm-hmm. just such an exquisite place. It was such an exquisite place to visit. And I come back over and over again to Italy as sort of a place where my awakening for beauty had already happened, but because of that, like, you can just look around at everything and see beauty. It is everywhere. I mean, some of my favorite photographs to this day were taken in Italy, just of people sitting on a bench or people walking down the street or the statues that you would see in the middle of a town square. I mean, it is beauty, beauty, beauty everywhere. And that beauty actually informs all the truth and goodness. I remember the first day we were there, the first full day we were there, we stopped in Florence. And we went to the Duomo the next morning, and we walked in, and it's, you know, it's kind of a tourist trap, I'm not going to lie. I mean, most of the churches there are sort of tourist traps, which was a little bit unfortunate, I guess. But they have, you know, like in any great cathedral or any great Duomo in Italy, they have these little side chapels. And one of the side chapels, I kind of just like squirreled over there and sat down. And I can't remember. I think I was by myself, but somebody else may have gone. And I happened upon a mass that was being said in English by an English priest. And I remember just being immersed in the liturgy in the middle of just astounding, what felt like timeless beauty. And just really feeling like, oh yeah, this whole thing is real. Like, this whole God thing, like, it's real. This whole Christianity thing, it's real. It feels real. And I think that was the first time that I 100% appreciated Francis Spufford's argument in his book Unapologetic, where he talks about the emotional apologetics of faith and the emotional apologetics of Christianity. I mean, it was the first time where I could actually feel the truth, beauty, and goodness working together in one place in the liturgy. And that moment has stuck with me really, you know, now going on 7 years later, over 7 years later.
Yeah. It, to me, is the first place I really felt like God was just showing off in a way.
Yeah.
When it comes to the beauty of it all. Like, it feels unreal for that much beauty to be in such a small, relatively small square footage of space when you look at it on the map. Because we're talking about Tuscany here, which is just a region of Italy. And I'm sure all of Italy is beautiful, but this is what we know. And, you know, there's this idea of the via pulchritudinis, which is Latin for the way of beauty. And I think that's what you're really speaking to, because you and I have talked about this before and is really the ethos of this podcast, that we have these transcendentals, and so much of our lives growing up in the 80s and 90s in youth group culture and probably just American worldview, if we were to subscribe to transcendentals, we would argue truth leads to goodness, which leads to beauty.
Yeah.
And to me, being in Tuscany is the epitome of the idea of beauty leading to goodness, which leads to truth.
Yep.
And for me personally, this is how God has led me and Kyle and our whole family to a deeper relationship with the church and with Christ. And it was through a seizing of beauty. And I can see how Tuscany was used as a huge part of this. And because we're talking about both the traditional definition of art, you know, paintings. I mean, we're talking the Sistine Chapel. Mm-hmm. We're talking the David. Mm-hmm. We're talking about pretty much, if you can think of some of the most jaw-dropping, historically famous art, there's a good chance it's in this area. But we're also talking about an artful way to live. And I think that's what you were speaking of when you were talking about us looking over the back deck of where we were staying, that yeah. the land seems to be carved in an artful way by the farmers. Totally. It almost seemed like a touristy joke, but the first morning waking up in Florence, we woke up, Kyle and I woke up to an opera singer practicing in the courtyard of Florence. And so we looked at each other and was like, this is not real.
Yeah.
It sounds fake, like contrived. And then the other thing I remember is your wife, Amber. It made me laugh because I don't know if you remember the food we had at this place where we were staying. It was just ridiculous.
Yes.
We would get this little basket of breakfast goods and there were little jars of yogurt, and even the jars were beautiful.
Yeah.
And she said, this is probably like day three or so, you know, it feels a little ridiculous to be eating ice cream for breakfast, mm-hmm. but you know, we're on vacation. And I don't remember if it was me or Nish, or maybe it was you, had to tell her, this isn't ice cream.
Yeah,
this is right. yogurt.
Yep. Yeah.
That's how ridiculous the yogurt was.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
to me, the food is art. The scenery is art. The landscaping is art. The shadows on the land are art. The color is art. It's weirdly hard to take good photographs. I agree with you that some of my favorite photos that we've taken are in Italy, but it's also hard because of the coloring and the shadow.
Yeah.
And the way it casts, you can't capture it quite as well as you want to because it's so otherworldly beautiful while you're standing there.
Yeah. I mean, you there are only certain times of the day where you can actually capture it in a way in which it looks real. And that's the crazy part about it is that it's so surreal that it mm-hmm. it, you know, when you look at it in a photograph, you're like, well, okay, how did you manipulate those colors? And how did you, you know, whatever, like bend the light, and how did you make those shadows? I mean, it's so bizarre how velvety the grass looks in the evening, and it, you know, it just, again, like you said, like everything about it is just amazingly, amazingly beautiful.
And so for us, when we lead this trip next summer, the idea, at least what I have, and I'm pretty sure you have, is that we want to take people on a pilgrimage to experience the beauty as similarly as possible to what we got to experience, even if it's not the exact same type of trip. We want, one of my favorite things on earth, and I've learned this through my years of trip leading, is to take people to meaningful places to have meaningful conversations.
Yeah.
Because you remember those conversations, and they seem to dig into our skin a little bit deeper whenever we have them somewhere sacred. And I don't necessarily mean sacred like a chapel, though that does happen. I mean sacred like, you know, a particular patch of dirt by a river
yeah.
can be sacred.
Yeah.
And that's what we hope to do next summer, no matter how big this trip ends up being, because we're not really sure. We're going with a group that handles all the details. And so far, the group has been delightful, and I'm very grateful to have this. But you and I are there, and your wife, to be a presence of basically pointing out the sacramentality of what's really there
yeah.
and inviting others to come alongside us. We're going as fellow pilgrims, not as experts and not as anything more than just pointer outers of the beauty.
Yeah. And I think that's important too. I think, you know, the more I think about life, and I guess the older I get, maybe the more I see life as a pilgrimage, you know, like it is. Mm-hmm. Truly a journey. It's a journey of experiencing the beauty and the wonder of the world. You know, I think I shared about this last week, but I don't know, maybe it was just to you, but I love to read Ignatius, and he has this contemplation on the attainment of love. And in the contemplation, he talks about, you know, seeing all things that come from God as a gift from the lover, like as a proof of love. And I think when we're on this pilgrimage, like when we look at the beauty of the earth, the way it's been carved out, when we eat the yogurt that was probably made within 25 kilometers of where we were staying, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. When we eat the cheese, when we visited, you remember when we visited that little farm and it was just this little agritourism place where they made all the cheeses and all the food and they grew everything locally and the hospitality was off the charts. When you experience even the rustic beauty, you begin to see like this pilgrimage really is worth it. Like the pilgrimage of life is really worth it. And if there's one thing that, you know, I know Amber and I don't want to do, it's we don't want to miss the pilgrimage of beauty that we're on and we want to experience it as much as we can. And I know that you're really skilled and experienced in leading that. So my question to you is, tell me a little bit about what it looks like to go on a trip with you.
Well, you know, I have gone to a number of touristy places. And when you go to touristy places, you always see those groups, right? You see the groups where the tour guide is holding up a little flag that looks like it belongs on the back of a bike from the 80s. I don't know what you call those. Perhaps the people are wearing matching shirts and it's a very we're walking kind of experience through the major sites. And while there are times and places for that, I am not here to disparage that at all. What I like to do most is to invite people to come alongside and travel the way I like to travel, which is the very scientific term I've coined, laid back adventure.
Mm. I like it.
And so, yeah. So laid back, meaning I am not fancy. I am not here to be fancy. We are not going to be dressy. We are not going to wow you with 3-star Michelin fine dining experiences, although we will have a couple of, I think the one of the restaurants we are going to has at least 1 Michelin star. I forget what. So we are doing some fun stuff, but we're doing it in a laid back way. So this isn't a hoity-toity kind of trip. It's fine if you're hoity-toity, just you shouldn't come to the trip expecting a hoity-toity leader or leaders at all. And then adventure, I don't necessarily mean cliff jumping or base jumping or jumping
of any sort.
Yeah. No crazy nightclub experiences, no private islands full of, you know, all sorts of who knows what. Yeah. Adventure meaning taking a step out of the hotel room and being willing to try new things. So I'm asking people that sign up for this trip to be willing to try new things, to be willing to do things a little differently than perhaps what they're used to. That tends to involve quite a bit of walking because it's Europe and
what we do, man.
What one does. That's what you do. It involves a lot of perhaps trying of, you know, a cheese you have not heard of. It might look like having to stand in a line that is not, as short as you would like. So an adventurous posture means being willing to try things that you otherwise wouldn't. So a laid-back adventurous spirit is what I bring to the table. Nothing life-changing in the sense of like, you can't find that from anyone else, but life-changing in the sense of if you go to these new places with that mindset, then you go as a traveler who wants to learn and not to conquer.
Yeah.
And that's what we're here to do. We're here to learn. What does it mean to live a more beautiful life? I think we can learn that from the Italians we'll meet along the way. I think we can learn that from Michelangelo as we look at his work. I think we can learn that from each other. You know, when we're sitting across the table over pasta and who knows what else. So we're here to learn from Italy and all it has to offer.
Yeah. 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 And I think one of the things that I know that you've done well in the past, whether it was your Literary London trip or whether it was the trip that you did with your family or whether it was the trip that we did in 2014. I mean, I think one of the things that you bring to the table is an openness to the spiritually curious. And I think, you know, this is that kind of trip where you may not be of the same faith as we are. You may be listening here and you may say, I'm not even a Christian. I barely believe in anything Jesus-y. That's cool. We are not leading a trip for the Jesus-y people. Right. You know, it may be that you say, well, I am very, very Jesus-y and you're Catholic. And so we're very, no, this is not what this is a trip about spiritual curiosity and about going and seeing how we've interpreted and how we've used beauty to point to the transcendent along the way. And I think a lot of us will maybe, you know, interpret that differently, but it's a place where I think Italy in particular is a place where I think if the spiritually curious go and open their hearts and their minds, they will have an experience with the transcendent. That's what I love about it. Yeah. And I think there are a handful of places in the world like that. You know, last week I was in Washington, D.C., and I was sort of walking around and you know, I described it to somebody last week as, you know, you don't have walls and ceilings outside, but if you did, they would be dripping with grease in Washington, D.C. It's just that kind of town. It doesn't feel spiritually transcendent. It doesn't feel like a thin place where you can go and find really anything spiritual. There's a lot of politics and power. But I made my way outside of the town, and I found a beautiful church. It was a massive church. It's on the American Catholic, I guess it's American Catholic University. So it was uh-huh. on that campus. And when I walked in and just saw the different representations of the saints and different representations of Mary and different representations of Christ and the beauty, the art, it was one of those places of refuge. You know, you kind of sort of get away and feel like, okay, I can breathe again. Like, this isn't greasy. This isn't nasty and dirty. And for me, that sort of like refuge that I experienced there in that church is very similar to how I experienced the entirety of Italy. It is one of those spaces in the world that is just kind of a refuge.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, Rome is one of the crazier cities out there. It's got traffic and people who talk loud and all sorts of things. And yet there is some weird way it feels like a refuge, and it's hard to put your finger on it other than there's something transcendent and divine that has happened there, possibly, probably because of its history and all that's happened there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And listen, there's plenty of grease there too, I'm sure. I mean, I remember we were walking by, I can't remember what, maybe it was the square where the David used to be sort of displayed. We kind of walked down the side street, and the tourist was like, yeah, 25 years ago, right here was a mafia car bombing. That was a big deal. And so, I mean, listen, it's people are people, and humanity exists everywhere you go. And there's plenty of grodiness everywhere. But I think on par, my experience was this is a thin place. It's a transcendent place.
Oh, 100% for sure. There is something that is indescribable about Italy. I'm going to put in the show notes the schedule of what we're going to do. So I don't necessarily feel the need to do a play-by-play of every single hour, but I thought it would be fun to just talk about a few of the highlights of what we're going to do, because we are doing a few things that are new, even new to me, along with doing some of the favorites that you and I have done together with our spouses. Yep. And we can attest to how worth it they are. We are going to start in Rome. Have you been to Rome?
I've never been to Rome, and I'm so excited.
Okay, cool. So we're starting in Rome, and we are going to be doing the usual, the foods. Oh, you know what? I will say that this is important, because I love, for the most part, I love our itinerary, because it's reminiscent a little bit of what I do when I lead Literary London, in that we've got some group things to do, but we also have time on your own, peppered generously throughout.
Huge.
So this is hugely important. So this is not that trip where Seth and I are holding up the flags and asking you to step over here and then come here and then here. If you want to spend 10 more seconds looking at that painting, sorry, you got to move on. It's not that at all. There's plenty of free time built in. So I'm going to just say that ahead of time. So we start off in Rome, and we're going to have some meals together, but we're also going to have some touring of places together. somewhat for practical reasons, because it's easier to do it as a group in terms of scheduling for when you get to go in, but also have meals where you just get to decide on your own where you go. And that's one of the great joys of Italy. We're going to go to the Vatican as part of Rome, which probably most listeners know, but the Vatican is its own country, but it's tucked right into Rome. So we're going to go to the Vatican Museum, St. Peter's Basilica, which Sistine Chapel is included in the Vatican Museum, the Scavi Tunnels underneath the Vatican. And then we're going to go to the Colosseum and the Roman Forum and Circus Maximus. So a lot of history. Really and truly, the places that are on an Italian postcard, mm-hmm. we're going to go to. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I like doing that right away. I have learned that there is a cadence that is most life-giving to travel. And it sometimes frequently includes starting off quickly and then slowing down.
Yeah.
So that we can both get over jet lag as quickly as possible and also tap into that adrenaline rush we have at first, which is, you know, from the excitement of being there. And then as we slow down and realize how much there is to soak in, we've checked some of those boxes so that we can actually reflect and appreciate some of it. So that's how we're doing it. Because then after that, there is a chance we're going to attend a papal audience, that it is on the calendar. And we are scheduled to go. It just, apparently, the Pope can change his mind at the last minute about where he goes.
I mean, it's kind of fair.
It's fair. He has plenty to do. But it's on the schedule, followed by the catacombs. And then we head out of Rome and we go to the Benedictine Monastery of St. Scholastica, who is St. Benedict's sister. Mm-hmm. And we're going to, basically, it's one of the only surviving monasteries founded by the Benedictines, like the OG in the Middle Ages.
The obese.
That's right.
The obese.
And it's still a working monastery. They grow produce. They have amazing food. We get to taste what it is they grow. We get to see the caves that some of these saints lived in. And then we head out to Tuscany. And this is probably more familiar territory. Have you been to Assisi? I can't remember.
I have not. We did not get to go to Assisi when we were there. Okay. And I can't remember why. I think we chose to go to Siena instead.
Right, which we'll get to do as well.
Oh my goodness, so, Siena. My favorite. It's my favorite town in the world.
It's a phenomenal town.
Yeah.
So on the way to Siena, we're going to stop in Assisi, which is part of Umbria. And we get to see St. Frank's Cathedral, as well as St. Clair mm-hmm. of Assisi's church. There's some amazing cathedrals and basilicas in this little, tiny little town. It's such a cool town.
Yeah.
And then we're going to stay in a villa. So this is a villa that's basically tucked in the countryside, and we're going to be here for most of the rest of the trip.
And some of the thought process around parking too was just the idea that, like, if there's a day that you want to create or paint or write or sculpt or do whatever it is that you want to do, and you don't want to take the day trip so that you can tend to your creative efforts and nurse your creativity, man, like, that is what Italy is for.
Yeah. This villa in particular looks right up that alley where all our food will be there. I think there's a pool there. So people, if they just need a day of rest where they just want to enjoy the beauty of Italy, they can. And so I'm really looking forward to this posture we are taking on exploring Italy, because the next day we are going to Siena, which is just a bonkers town,
yes,
as you know.
Totally.
After that, we then head on to wine tasting in Tuscany, which I am assuming is optional for those of you who are not into wine. It's totally fine. But if you're into wine, it's a pretty darn cool place in the world to do some wine tasting. Tuscany's kind of known for it, you know. And then in that evening, we're going to a little village that I have never been to. San Gimignano, I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but they say it's the epitome of a Tuscan hilltop town. It's got 14 medieval towers and lots of piazzas, and it's got good coffee and good food. So sounds about right to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then from there, we're heading to Florence. And I know you've been to Florence.
Oh, so. Man. Such a cool town. Yeah. Such a cool town. Such amazing galleries. I mean, just that's going to be a blast.
It is. Yeah. So we're going to go, see the Ponte Vecchio, the Duomo for sure. The Mercato, which is pretty much a farmer's market on steroids, I think is what you could call it.
Right.
And then Yeah. And time on your own. So if you want to go to the Medici Chapel and learn all about the bonkers history of the town, to see Michelangelo's David at the Accademia, the Uffizi Gallery, whatever, we're going to end with Mass. Mass will be celebrated with us, or for us, by a priest that we are hoping can come along with us for some spiritual direction. And then the final day is a day on your own. Like, spend how you will at your leisure in Florence, because I think that is what we all crave when we're on a trip with a lot of people. We'll have plenty of gelato. I know we probably ate gelato at least once a day on average. I remember having gelato 3 times a day.
I think we actually had it 4 or 5 times.
I think I remember that.
It was
that
ridiculous.
Yeah. So we'll have plenty of that. We'll have plenty of moments, hidden pocket moments in between all of what I just said, because the trip will not go as planned, because that's what travel is, right? And we will experience it together and see what it's like. So to talk about the who just a tiny bit, you already alluded to it, and I really am glad you did. We are pro families. We are pro couples. We're pro friends. We want you to go with a posture of learning, is what I would say. Learning and curiosity. If you're hearing all this and you're thinking, well, that sounds great, but I don't prescribe to your worldview, that's okay. We just ask you to have a learner's posture and be curious.
Yeah. Learning and curiosity. And I think that's, to me, that was the thing that made it so eye-opening when I went, is I don't know that I had any expectations. I think the only expectation I had is that I would write a little bit while I was there. But outside of that, I don't know that I had any expectations. And I think because of that, just the openness, the curiosity, the sort of take it as we did, you know, take it as it came sort of mentality, it made it such a better trip. Years ago, it would have been 2007, 2008, it was over the New Year's, I went to visit a friend in Mozambique. And when we got in Mozambique, my friend said, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. You tell me, how should we experience Mozambique? And he said, let's just live life. Like, no agenda, no pressure. Some days we'll go out to the farm. Some days we'll go into the town. We're just going to live a normal day in the life. You're here for a week. Let's just hang out and take life as it comes. And it really changed the way I view travel. And it even changes the way I view travel with an itinerary. So even if I'm on an itinerary, I'm still going to kind of do me, keeping my eyes open for what is transcendent here. Like, what speaks to me? What makes me more curious? What sparks an interest in me? And I think those are the kind of people that we're sort of looking for. Like, if that's you and you want to come along, man. If you want a regimented, hardcore, you know, a pilgrimage where it's super spiritual the whole time, and all, that's fine. We probably aren't your people.
I would say the other way you might be disappointed in this trip is if you expect brilliant thought leader mic drops from you or me or your wife, because I can't think of three people less like internet thought leaders than perhaps the three of us.
Yes.
Yep. Well, I will put in the show notes all the things you need to know. Like I said, we're going with a company who's great, which means not only do you and I get to just be there with our, you know, pilgrims and enjoy the experience, it also means a lot of the logistics, if you're curious, will be answered by other people, as well as I don't know the word I'm looking for, but basically you might be concerned because we're in a little pandemic right now. What might it look like in 2022? And while none of us are in the future, it is a blessing that we are going with a group that does this all the time, is doing this all the time as we speak, and knows what they're doing. So they lead, I forget how many trips a year, all over the world, including Europe. And so they will be, we're in good hands, in other words. Yeah. This little roadblock of our global pandemic will be, I don't want to say taken care of, like it won't be a problem, but they'll answer your questions if you got them.
Yeah. Love it.
Cool.
Love it.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, Seth, as we end all our little chats, I want to know from you, what is something you are reading, watching, or listening to that is adding more beauty to your life?
Yeah. So, you know, in the vein of beauty and observing beauty, there's an amazing book that I read last year, and I actually had to return to it this last week. I had to actually thumb through it for a project that I'm working on. It's by, I think, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but Erling Kagge, K-A-G-G-E, not American. So who knows how you actually pronounce it? I don't really know. It sounds Dutchish. So if we have any Dutch folks out there know how to, you know, pronounce that, just please let me know. But it is a book called Silence in the Age of Noise. And it is such a beautiful book. I bought this book on a whim because I happened to be at the bookstore and the cover was so beautiful that I just thought I have to read it. Whatever's in this has got to be good. So I picked it up and I read it 100% based on the cover, and I've become a complete fanboy.
Really?
There's a little bit of name dropping in it, which anytime I read nonfiction and there's name dropping, I really side eye and hard eye roll things. So there's a little bit of that, but also the dude is explored friggin' everywhere. So I guess when you're that guy, if you want to name drop a little bit, it's kind of cool. But anyway, he just explores what it feels like or the experience of being in some of these remote places and experiencing silence, particularly in an age where there is so much noise all the time, all the way around us, you know, whether it's social media noise or the noise of the television or a podcast that we happen to be on or whatever. Just so much noise, so much noise. Mm-hmm. But let me read a quote to you because I love just the style of his writing. He writes, "The starry sky is the truest friend in life when you first become acquainted. It is ever there. It gives ever peace, ever reminds you that your restlessness, your doubt, your pains are passing trivialities." I love it. It's just like philosophy of silence dropped and sprinkled all throughout these books, all this book. And the entries are really short. It's kind of one of the things that sort of inspired to some degree the Book of Waking Up. You know, in the Book of Waking Up, I lay it out in these little short passages that build one upon another. He doesn't quite build the same way one upon the other. It's not building an argument, but they are these little shorter passages, and it's an amazing little book. So I highly recommend it, Silence in the Age of Noise.
Nice. And I love when books are laid out like that. I loved yours, that it was nice and short chapters, because that's the world we live in. But when you can say a lot with few words, to me, that means you're doing your job well. So I got it in my shopping cart.
Speaking of Tess, do you remember the first book that you and I talked about? And I think we talked about it in Italy, that was sort of laid out, that like caught us as it was. I mean, we've read books that were laid out this way, but it was the first one that like gripped us that was laid out this way. Do you remember what it was?
Mm-mm.
All the Light We Cannot See.
Yep. I was going to say, I know exactly what you're talking about, because one of the books I would recommend people that go to Italy with us is by the same author, Anthony Doerr, and that's Four Seasons in Rome, which I don't know if you've read
It's beautiful. And did you know he has another book coming out?
Same idea. Nah,
yeah,
perfect. I love it.
We all must pre-order it. Go pre-order Anthony Doerr's new book.
That's right. Oh man, that's cool.
Yep. Good so, to anyway, to that end, Tish.
Yeah.
What are you reading, listening to, watching, watching, cooking, eating, experiencing that is bringing more truth, beauty, or goodness to your life?
Well, as you know, here in Texas, September is a tease because it sounds like it should be fall, and it's decidedly not, even remotely. So a year ago, I found this playlist. It was last September, I remember this, on Spotify. I have no idea who Hannah Cody is, but she made this playlist, and it's called It's Not Fall, Folks. And her description of this playlist simply says, "It may not feel like fall on the outside, but we're trying to make it so on the inside." And I thought, I know what she means. So I started playing it, and it was like, you know what? You're right. All these songs are fall. I'm willing it to come through this music. So I dusted it off again this past weekend in an effort to will fall weather to show up. And it's just great. It's just a classic, good playlist of song. You know, Radical Face, who I've talked about before, who I love, Sufjan, Gregory Alan Isakoff, Taylor Swift, Ben Howard. Just good singer-songwriters, Penny and Sparrow, Phoebe Bridgers. It's just great. And then I'm going to pair it. I don't normally talk about anything else besides reading, watching, listening to, but I'm taking a cue from you because you did this recently. I like candles, and there's a candle that I just lit this morning called Stockbridge, and it's from Laurel Mercantile. If you've seen the show Hometown, it's that company in Laurel, Mississippi. Okay. I got a candle from them and it just smells like fall. It smells like amber, not your wife, but the
that was going to be really weird.
It's an Amber Haynes scented candle. Mm-hmm. Amber and I don't know, pumpkin, whatever it is they put in candles that make it smell like fall. It's like that. So the combo of those is making it feel a little bit like fall, even though the AC is blasting and I had to turn on the fan earlier. So
here's the question.
I'm pretending.
Here's the question that mm-hmm. I have. Have you gotten into Oktoberfests yet? Have you bought any Oktoberfest beers yet?
You mean this year or in general?
This year.
Not this year. Kyle's the one that does that. And he was talking about it actually this weekend saying he's kind of one of the weirdos that likes pumpkin in his fall beer, but it has to be done really well. I say weird. It's not weird. He's just very particular and he has found a smattering that are great. And so he's been talking about going to Trader Joe's or wherever to get that beer, but not yet.
But
have you? Well, I guess you haven't.
I have not, but it feels weird to me when I look out at the supermarket or whatever, and I see pumpkin ales and Oktoberfest already out. And I'm like, man, it's 91 degrees outside in Arkansas. How in the world? It's not, I mean, like, I know. You have to buy it and save it for a month or something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not time yet for the fall food and drink.
It
I don't think
not.
I heard that Starbucks moved up its fall drinks to like mid-August this year. And I just thought that's bonkers.
It's
I don't
stupid.
Even understand what you're trying to
it's
do.
It's stupid.
Right.
It's we are not sponsored by Starbucks. If they ever wanted to sponsor us, we would take it. We love Starbucks. I drink crappy Starbucks coffee from time to time. But Starbucks, listen up, man. You got to stop. It's talking about truth, beauty, and goodness. There's nothing true about pumpkin spice lattes in August.
No.
False.
It makes no sense.
False.
Yeah. Entirely. Mm. We're going to get plenty of it over the next few months. So that's where I've been. My solace this year, I've been better this year than I have any other year at just embracing the season I'm in, even if it feels like scorched earth. That doesn't mean that once September rolls around, I'm not eagerly anticipating fall. And there are just enough hints of it. Like it's the temp is dropping like 5-10 degrees in the morning. And so you can tell it's on its way. It's just not here yet. So I'm just preparing for it.
As well
but
does.
Not Yeah, just not cuisinely yet, only in music and candles, I guess. Anyway, yeah.
Love it.
All right. Well, it is time to wrap this up. You can find this episode as well as all episodes at adrinkwithafriend.com. And if you like the show and what we're doing here, help keep it going by picking up the next round of drinks. As I've said many times, the show is free for you to listen to, but not free for us to make. So at the cost of a cup of coffee or a pint, you can play a big part. Find the link to do this in the show notes of this episode or at adrinkwithafriend.com. And thank you so, so much in advance. You can find me and how to connect with me, especially via my newsletter at tishoxenrider.com. Seth, where can people find you?
They can find me at sethhaynes.com. You can also find me on Instagram at Seth Haynes, which I always just tell people, like, just go follow me. I'm not creating anything for the month of September. I'm taking that little breaky break, but come follow me there. It's fun.
There you go.
We're fun.
There you go. And if you want more info about Italy, check the show notes of this episode because I've got all the links there for you. Music for the show is by Kevin MacLeod and editing is by Kyle Oxenrider. I'm Tish Oxenrider with Seth Haynes and we will be back here with you soon. Thanks for listening.